You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das. I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepthi Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it.
Welcome to Tech Cetera. This is your favorite tech podcast, and we are joined in a slightly different format this week. Deepthi Ahuja, who was our friend and co-host, has left us. That's not to say that she's left all of us. She's just left for the United States to finally buy her Rabbit R1 assistant.
And, I think there's a reason for that because recently I think I read a report in The Verge that the R1 is actually an Android app. So the folks from Rabbit clarified or rather presented their point of view that no, this is not, it is not an Android app. You just can't take it and put it on another phone, which is actually what the other person, one of the researchers had took it on, put it on an Android phone and showed how it worked and more or less had similar features of the Android. But in Rabbit One's case, or the owners or the founders clarified it or presented their point of view, saying that we do not share the technology with third parties, etc. But I don't think that has got much ice, and I think which is the reason why probably Deepthi felt really disappointed and
hurt and disappointed.
Went down the rabbit hole literally.
But we'll continue. We'll have, there's me, your host, and Leslie. We'll try to answer all your tech questions and discuss what's happening in the world. While we are on that topic, while we are on that note, Leslie, something very interesting before we get on to something that's a burning question on everyone's minds. While we're on Rabbit's topic, there's another AI device, the Humane AI Pin, which has kind of hit all the wrong headlines after a review of this product by Marcus Brownlee, who's usually more or less kind to a lot of products, but seems to have absolutely hated this one. And he's gone on to say that he's really unsure of what the point of this particular device is. And this has gotten a lot of people talking about whether, there are too many people trying to cash in on the AI hype, and the hype's actually not worth everything. And also the fact that voice as a primary interface doesn't appear to have taken off. I mean, the most successful that voice interfaces have gone is Amazon's Alexa and perhaps Siri on iPhones and things like that. But have you been following this entire issue, and have you had the chance to take a look at this AI pin? Because I haven't personally.
No, so AI pin, I haven't had a look at it, of course, because I think part of the reason is because neither is the Rabbit nor the Human AI pin available in India, to the best of my knowledge.
Right.
So that does put us at a disadvantage where if you really want to try these gadgets out. So I wouldn't really comment on the part of it. I always will have to rely on these secondary reports. But the sense that I get, having looked at so many technologies over these years, is that when you create or generate a hype around these gadgets initially, you are bound to, lower, and because people start getting disappointed when the gadgets do not meet their expectations.
Absolutely.
So I think it's extremely important that when a new gadget is released or a new technology is released, you have to give it time to mature. Initially, it's a problem not only with the Rabbit, the R1. It's a problem not only with the Human AI pin. It's not even a problem with AI. It's the problem with us, where we tend to deify all these technologies. We
put
on a pedestal, then they do not meet our expectations, and then we say, hey, hello, what's happening?
This happens
even if you are following the driverless car racing in Abu Dhabi. Yas Marina racing track. The same thing happened. They had these Formula One kind of cars driving out autonomously, and some of them were, you know, sort of swerving like drunken kind of cars.
Right.
Other ones were banging into each other. But that was not the purpose. The purpose was to show the kind of prowess and the evolution of driverless cars.
So I think the capabilities, yes.
It's important to, you know, sit back and understand that this is what these technologies can do at this point in time. And
right.
Not, you know, throw the baby with the bathwater. That is what I would humbly suggest.
Absolutely. And in fact, I think one of the sort of premise behind this AI pin was pretty interesting, that you don't need to use your phone and you'll have all your services that will operate seamlessly with your voice command. You can just ask it to, you know, book you a cab while you want a sandwich for your journey. And you don't have to open a, you know, like a food delivery app and a cab delivery app and, you know, do all that process. The idea seems pretty interesting, but the implementation is seemingly not ready, which seems believable. But on that note, I'd like to draw your attention to the elephant in every room, at least in India right now, which is the 2024 general elections. The seven-phase election is on. It's on. And there's been a lot of headline that AI has stolen during the elections too. The first of which was a video that was seemingly posted by Aamir Khan, the Bollywood actor, endorsing a particular political party. Then it was followed by a video of Ranveer Singh, who was very interestingly wearing rather sober clothes for once, and also endorsing a particular political party. And eventually it came down to a deepfake of the Union Home Minister Amit Shah, whose speech was seemingly altered with AI. And all of that has, of course, brought to the fore something that pretty much every tech commentator or tech analyst or observer of this field has spoken about, that 2024 is going to be the first year of when AI plays a major role in general elections in India. And we don't know yet if the role's going to be major, but deepfakes definitely... a lot of, at least, headlines are being caught, and if at all the, you know, the results of the election is going to be impacted by it, it's going to be a pretty interesting juncture to look at.
Yeah, I mean, so let me step back a little, and I would like to, you know, give a little perspective on deepfakes. It's extremely important that we understand the technology behind deepfakes. So, for instance, if you look at any large language model or large multimodal model, the LLMs, or the small language models, etc., that is the craze, generative AI that we talk about, you have to realize that the underlying technologies are what are known as transformers, basically, which have revolutionized the, you know, the field of natural language processing, which simply means that talking in the language that you and me are talking, the way we are talking, we want machines also to talk in that kind of simple language. And so you have transformers that are powering many of the LLMs, whether it is GPT-3, GPT-4, Llama, Claude, or whatever it be, okay?
Anyway. Right.
Now, similarly, you have what are known as generative adversarial networks, which we have spoken about in podcasts, which are GANs. And these GANs are what power most of the deepfakes. Now, GANs were introduced by Ian Goodfellow and his colleagues in somewhere in 2014. Okay.
Right.
They comprise a generator that creates images, because the name itself is explanatory. They generate images. And there's a discriminator. That so the discriminator attempts to you know, distinguish between the real and the generated images. So that's so these two networks actually compete with each other to generate the new synthetic images, and that is what as a synthetic image. Remember, I'm not using the word deepfake at this point in time. Okay, so allow me that, bear with me a bit. I'm using the word synthetic images, generated images. I'm not using the word deepfake at this point in time. Now, there's also a similar kind of technology which is called a variational autoencoder, or the VAE. Okay. Now, GANs, So these are techniques. GAN is a technique. VAE is a technique. They're typically used to, again, generate realistic human kind of faces and synthetic data for AI training. So AI has to train on data. Only then would it be effective. It has, but if it runs out of human-generated data or people stop sharing their data, then they have to create what is known as synthetic data. That's what GANs and VAEs are used for. Now, VAE also consists of an encoder that takes the input and a decoder that decodes them. So it takes the variable, reconstructs the original kind of input, and that's what it does. Now, if you look at GANs carefully, they find applications in various fields. It includes art, advertising, even healthcare for that matter of fact, where they can convert MRIs into CT scans. Now, that's the power of a generative adversarial network. So on the product side, AI tools are giving people who cannot speak, say, for instance, you cannot speak due to a particular illness. AI tools can give you a computer-generated voice. Look at Stephen Hawking was a classic example, one of the examples. And developers have created AI personas for popular games. You are a gamer, so you should know that very well.
Right.
And many of these games have been used. So look at the kind of, you know, use cases that are there. And of course, on the other hand, now I will come to what you have been talking about, that this very ability is being misused by unscrupulous persons to alter images, clone faces.
Right.
And again, there's a reason for that. It's because of the prowess of the GANs, prowess of
absolutely
technology that, you know, imagine just taking a 3-second video that you and me are talking. Somebody takes just a three-second audio clip of us and runs a podcast with some kind of
absolutely
different thing. Of imagine we are tech journalists, if somebody takes our clips and makes us endorse a product that we would never do in our lifetime.
And that's something that's absolutely possible. In fact, Microsoft's Foley had exactly that premise, right? That you give a 3-second audio sample and it'll very efficiently clone your audio. And like you were saying, it's now gotten to that point where all this technology, which can be used very successfully in a lot of practical use cases, has now come to very dubious terms, where people are now trying to figure out what to really think of it.
And see, that's not going to happen. See, I'm probably one of those people who takes a contra, line of thinking on this. That it's utopian to expect that these things will simply vanish. I think the horse is already bolted out of the stable. So it's it's extremely difficult for any one company or government with the best of its policies and all to come up. For instance, we have not been able to stop ransomware. We have not been able to stop phishing. We have not been able to stop any kind of scam. What we can do is use the same AI tools to sort of put guardrails around and have kind of broad policies where, you know, people can get alerts probably. Now, look at it. Today, you do kind of banking and you are doing it from a different kind of IP address. You immediately get an email alerting you, saying that, you know, your somebody has accessed your bank from this IP address. If it is you, ignore. If it is not you, please change your password, right? I'm just saying, can this technology be used by some kind of smart developer to create a kind of alert that this image or this video is probably generated by AI? You may want to take a cross-check on it before taking any action on it. I don't know. I'm just saying that you probably could use these technologies to enhance the efficacy of being alert.
And that's what I think is already happening in a way with, on Twitter now we're supposed to call it X. But on Twitter, you have that tag which appears, which was started with Twitter Birdwatch. And today it's integrated into the platform, which says manipulated media. And, a lot of these big tech.
Even that will make mistakes, remember, because not everything that is what the algorithms label as manipulated media could put you as a massive disadvantage. Because sometimes if you look at any of your copies, if you check for plagiarism, it will tell you you have plagiarized, which actually would not be the case.
Absolutely. And, on that note, in fact, I really liked the way Twitter, and I'm specifically saying Twitter because this is from the pre-Elon Musk era, I like the approach that they took, that they were using algorithms to flag the content and then have people from within the community of users add notes on what this actually seems like. And when the notes kind of reach a consensus, that's when they would put out a short brief below this tag and state that this is what people seem to think. And I think that's a pretty interesting approach to spotting content that is incorrect or even misinformation for that matter.
Yeah, but sure. I would also like to give our listeners a different perspective, in a sense that it may be something that they may want to think about. And this I have spoken about with my other colleague, Jayant. We run the AI Rising podcast. On that, we had a similar kind of discussion. And I pointed out that, see, for instance, when you watch a sci-fi movie, for instance, okay, do they put out a disclaimer saying that, the technology is not sufficiently advanced? Like, for instance, when they showed Minority Report, okay, they showed Tom Cruise, just simply moving screens and sort of predicting a crime even before it actually happened. Those kind of things are just about happening in today's world. But remember that, I think Minority Report was something almost like 2 decades back. Now, did that technology exist? But did they put out any kind of statement saying that, this kind of content has not, the technology is not sufficiently advanced to have this kind of a movie being made? No, they did not. So if you watch a movie called, if you watch Dracula, does that mean that you believe that vampires exist? Or you watch a Harry Potter series, do you believe in magic? So these kind of things are the fake, our whole, fight of real versus unreal is going to be a continuing kind of exercise for millennia. It's not going to end.
I think the concern here is that, what is the extent to which a fake or manipulated content impacts us as a society in general? And that's where,
But your belief so your belief in vampires wouldn't have impacted you, wouldn't it impact your psyche as much? And there are many people who believe in ghosts, who believe in superstitions, okay? And they actually act on the superstitions, and it is harmful to many people. So I'm saying, as a society, we need to, take a closer look at our own thoughts and beliefs.
Absolutely. In fact, and that's where I think one of the discussions, in fact, I was speaking with a few people who are in discussions with not just India, but multiple governments around the world very recently, and they happen to raise one very valid point that, there's going to be a wide range of content which has been manipulated in some form or the other, and most of them don't have to be deep fake, so to speak. They can be very basic, as simple as an image with a quote below it. You just never know where the quote was attributed from, and for most people, these content are being circulated through groups on WhatsApp and Telegram and Facebook groups, where most of the conversations are not moderated, and trying to curtail or control that kind of a narrative is very difficult inherently, because most of that content is being circulated by people who believe in that instead of going and verifying the facts and so on and so forth. There's not even a tech problem, so to speak.
Exactly. I keep on saying that this is a societal problem, because LLMs have been trained on that very data. All the synthetic data that you are trying to generate, which is going to be far more dangerous because it will contain so many other biases, is going to be trained on that data. It will generate images, and it will generate data, it will generate video, it will generate audio, which all from kind of content that is not necessarily authentic. So you are going to have a major issue here. But of course, as I said, I also believe that we will have tools that will be able to at least keep things in check. So broad policies as to what's acceptable in the courts, broad policies on what's acceptable, when you're having a discussion in a normal debate, or what's acceptable on broadcast TV or in print or in books, etc. Those kind of rules will generally will gradually start being flowing. It will take time. It will take time because, the incredible pace at which these technologies are moving, it's not giving enough time for policymakers to lay down policies. It's becoming becoming extremely difficult. But
it has.
We will get there once these technologies are sufficiently mature. We will find ways. I'm positive about it. It may take a little more time.
And in fact, on that note, there is a new law in the United States. I mean, it's not a law yet. It's an act that's been proposed, the United States Generative AI Copyright Act of 2024, introduced by Democratic Senator Adam Schiff. About a month ago, he introduced this. And that entire act is all about trying to fairly compensate creators for their data being used in all the training data sets around the world by multiple companies. And the very premise is that, all these companies are going to commercially benefit. They are commercially benefiting. So why should they do that by using the hard work of other people? And that's generated very interesting sort of reactions and thoughts from around the industry, where people have been speaking about, whether it's really possible. Big tech companies are saying that it's difficult, and of course some of them have come up saying that if you ask us to show our entire data set and disclose them and come out in the open with it, it's like giving out our trade secret. It's like asking KFC to give their recipe and so on. And that's sort of the arguments that are being made, but I think that's one interesting policy that takes a step towards the right direction for the future in terms of, holding tech firms accountable for the data that they use.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's exactly what I was driving at, that there's going to be a lot of negotiation.
Right. That's what.
There's a lot of give and take that's going to happen before we actually come out with a robust kind of policy. And even that policy, it is like the Constitution of India. You have to keep on revisiting it. You have to keep on making amendments. As you get more data, these kind of policies you'll have to keep on revisiting these policies and keep on upgrading and upgrade, the way you do it for a smartphone, the way you do it for the device. You have these kind of, whenever there's a new virus, you send a new software update. That's what you will have to keep on doing with all the policies. There is no one policy that is going to be a mother kind of policy, which is what most people are trying to, do at this point in time. No, it's not going to happen that way. All these policies will have to keep on revisiting these policies, because the technology is not standing still. I mean, I do not know whether you saw the video of Sam Altman, who says that I do not care whether I spend $5 billion or $50 billion, because we are creating AGI. So how much we do not care about how much cash we burn, because we are working on AGI, which is going to be helpful for society. Now, if the CEO of OpenAI makes that kind of a statement, that they're going to throw money at these technologies. So policymakers have their work cut out.
But speaking about
the smartphones, this is an area that you love. So I'm going to ask you something. I do not know whether you heard about this concept called the boring phone. Okay, so there's actually a boring phone, which is a new featureless flip phone. If you remember the Motorola.
Oh, yes, phone. Right.
Okay,
yes.
So these kind of featureless flip phones it was unveiled in April at Milan Design Week, that's Italy. And guess who unveiled it? Take a guess. With your experience.
I would say probably one of the fashion design brands?
Of course. Now, that's a no-brainer. But okay,
maybe like a Louis Vuitton.
Okay, let's. It's a little hard to guess. The fashion retailer was Bodega, and the main guy was Heineken Beer.
I think there was this entire concept of Heineken trying to come up with a phone for digital detox.
Now,
which is weird.
Exactly. So what they have done is the boring phone is part of this new dumb phone boom. So this is built on the suspicion of, you know, the Generation Z towards privacy and, you know, all this that people are harvesting their tech. Exactly the kind of points that we spoke about, how tech companies are sort of just taking your data and you do not know what they're doing with it. And in fact, actually, if you look at the number of smartphones in India, I think the number is something like 600 million if you look at CLSA report.
Just over that, yes.
Yeah, which excludes, I think, the refurbished smartphone.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you look at Counterpoint recent numbers, I think it was something like 680 million, which includes the refurbished. So I think the numbers are more or less there. With these kind of smartphones, and world over, I think there are almost like 7 billion smartphones. 6.8 or something like that, some number. Now, interestingly, if Gen Z is, you know, if these kind of boring phones gain traction, the interesting part is there is a Luddite Club, which is a group of New York school children who announced way back in December 2022 that they were giving up their iPhones in favor of flip phones. Now,
I like that they have the luxury of.
Exactly, because
we've gone the full circle.
Not only that, but the interesting part is if you were to take the, if you were to have a Luddite club in the UK, for instance, you cannot do that because schools in UK rely on online activity scheduling,
absolutely,
and for the smartphones. So you're going to have a big issue here. So this would be interesting, you know, to ask one of the Gen Z people whether they would actually be able to give up their smartphone or take a digital detox. Perhaps yes. But what I like is at least the Gen Z itself is thinking about, you know, taking this whole thing of digital detox a little seriously.
Right. Absolutely. And it, in fact, Heineken and Bottega is not even just the only one. I think HMD Global during their big, at the recent Mobile World Congress, they had this entire big presentation of we're going to do something big and we're going to reinvent our brand. And they unveiled a feature phone that is shocking pink in color and it looks like a toy. Huh. And it's co-branded with Barbie.
Not like the rabbit.
Yeah, definitely not like the rabbit. And it's got nothing. It's just got a keypad. It's got a basic 2-inch TFT display. You can make phone calls. You can send SMS messages. And you got some of those legacy games that you used to get back in the day with memory and Snake and all of those things. And it's fantastic. In fact,
Pac-Man?
There was, no, I think this was even more basic. So this one didn't have Pac-Man, but there was a Nokia feature phone, which was shaped like the banana. Cool. I think that had the Pac-Man game. But it's very interesting, this particular trend, because I don't know about everybody else, but I would personally love to have a phone like this. Of course, it can't be the only phone. I don't think we, any of us, have the luxury to do that. But I would love to have a phone like this, you know, for all the time that I am not working. And 8 hours a day, I'm happy to use an iPhone or an Android phone and all of that.
Since we're in the same organization, I will not comment on that.
But, you know, I think because I recently took a holiday and, you know, I took a book along to read and I realized that I was finding it difficult to read the book, even though there was no network in this area. And I couldn't, my phone couldn't catch the internet signal.
Some nice name you did mention.
This is a place called Jilling in Uttarakhand.
That's what I told you.
Delightful place.
You're chilling in Jilling.
I was indeed chilling in Jilling. And while chilling in Jilling, I realized that a little digital detox has become essential for a lot of us who have, you know, for whom technology is...
You know, all this kind of over-information, we need to retain our sanity. And it's important to have sometimes, instead of a smartphone, you also need to have these boring phones or dumb phones once in a while.
Definitely. And for all our listeners who've stuck on with us in this episode for this long, The key takeaway is that we're all in favor of the boring phones, even though these phones do seem to not have too many features. And on that very interesting note, from two very ardent tech enthusiasts, it's time to end. If you think you are in favor of a boring phone, if you think you're too much into Snapchat and Instagram and the entire works, do let us know. And like always, do write to us, do get in touch with us and tell us what you would like to hear more. And on that note, it's time to end. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.
Okay, folks, adios till next week.
So, folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Etc.
You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.